This episode is brought to you by Home Team Inspection Service. When you partner with Home Team, you're getting more than a home inspection. You're delivering the home team experience. With a team approach, fast turnarounds, and package options that include home inspection warranties, Home Team helps real estate pros stand out. Plus, many locations now offer pay at close, giving your clients flexibility when they need it most. Schedule your next inspection with confidence at hometeam.com.
And then all of a sudden, it's time and they said we won. And that's when I think it really hit and it was real of like, hey, sometimes going back to like, you might not know exactly how to do it. You might not know if you even have the funding for it. But if what your idea is valuable enough, I think it all comes.
Welcome to the Color Money Podcast. We have an amazing session in store for you today. My name is Bowman Keaty, and I'm joined by my amazing co-host, Imric Peace, or Unc, as we like to call him. He is always got wisdom. He's representing our culture in his attire, and we are excited to have him. Today, we have an amazing guest, and she's brought another amazing guest to join us. So we are joined today by Rocio Hermosillo and Cucu Sa. And they are going to share with us some of the amazing work that they are doing in Iowa. Rocio is the co-founder and lead of Team Ella, which is one of NAREP's top 100 Latino teams in the United States. She's helped shape the first Latina-led real estate team in Iowa, creating amazing spaces for women to lead, collaborate, and thrive. She's done a lot in the work of serving a bilingual population, been recognized as one of the top 40 under 40 business leaders, but is really just an amazing human being that's doing some really cool stuff to help make real estate a powerful tool in communities that she's passionate about serving. And she's joined by her partner, Cucu, who's going to tell us a little bit about some amazing projects that they're working on together. So great to have you guys. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah. Hey, Bo, I just want to say this. I'm just happy to see Iowa represented because we don't see Iowa anywhere and none of our radar at all. So I'm so happy that the colors, the black and brown, are represented in Iowa. I'm happy. So we want to know what's happening in Iowa. We want to know what y'all putting down in Iowa. I'm excited. I'm all ears.
You know, it's so funny you mentioned that, Emmerich. And Bo, thank you for the intro and having us here. Anytime we go to conferences or anything, they're always like, wait, there's Latinos in Iowa? And it's kind of a thing, like, y'all exist out there. So it's been such a cool journey to see the progression of Iowa, but also our minority, like the Black and Brown community, continue to grow together. So I'm so excited. Just a little bit about what's going on in Iowa. I've been in Des Moines, Iowa since I was 2 years old. So that's all I know. This is home. You know, similarly to how other immigrants came, you know, parents came, they wanted a better life for us. And so I think I didn't always dream about doing real estate, but I always did dream about how can I make sure I pay forward what my parents sacrificed and making sure that I go all out as much as I can to help others do the same thing.
I always love to hear about, like, how did you end up in real estate? Because everyone, you know, like you said, people don't usually, you know, grow up saying, someday I want to be a realtor. I want a real estate team. They take an interesting path and you've started to really branch out and look into the power of the other parts of real estate as well. So I just love to, like, tell us the origin story. How'd you end up in real estate? So 2 years old, you're in Iowa. How do we get to where we are today?
Yes. So actually, this is going to be full circle here in a bit where Cucu shares kind of a bit about the project. But when we first came to Des Moines, we lived in a one bedroom fourplex with like 10, 12 other people. So we would all share that space. And I remember my dad, we couldn't bring my sisters because we were still trying to just stabilize ourselves. Fast forward, you know, my parents figured out how to get some jobs, how to speak somewhat English. And long story short, in terms of growing up, I was always one of the only ones that looked like me. There weren't a lot of people that I saw in either teachers or power positions or anything. They just didn't quite look like me. I was just always curious and kept asking questions. And ultimately, my parents always led with their heart. So we were always in the community. We're always helping others because we knew what it took for us to get to where we were. So it was a lot of volunteering throughout the community. I've been playing soccer since I was 12, so really got to hear the stories of other people as how they were having a hard time trying to find a home, how they were buying on contract, and then at the end of the day, they never really bought it, and they ended up losing the house. There was a lot of those kind of issues. At the end of the day, I grew and ended up being a teen mom at 18, and I had to decide if I was what trajectory I was going to take. I knew I still wanted to, again, my original thing was to help my parents and to provide a better life. And so I continued to go to college. Fast forward, I thought I was going to be the Fortune 500 CEO of a company in Iowa. I always wanted to be kind of that leader. And then I got to a point where I was like, what am I doing? I'm working for someone else. I'm capped for what I can make. I know I want to make a big impact. And I just felt kind of stuck. So one day I saw a friend who was posting on social media, looked like she was having a blast out here doing real estate. And I'm like, wait, if she can do it, I can do it. So I up and left and quit my job 100%. I said, when I go in, I just go all in, sat my family down and I said, hey, y'all, this is what I want to do. I told them no matter what, I was going to succeed. And the first year was tough. It was really tough. Went from having stable income to maybe making, not even half of what I used to make, almost lost my house. But I kept going and I continued my pursuit. And that second year, that was where the growth really came. I learned from an investor. Today, he probably owns over 700 doors and he took me in as a mentee. And really what I did is I approached him to be like, hey, can I learn what you're doing? Don't charge me. Like, I'm here to learn, not to earn. And I'll take whatever I can. And so he did. And then I ended up acquiring a lot of his listings. And from his listings, my business continued to grow. So that was my first insight of seeing how real estate can really change someone's world and someone's life. But you don't know what you don't know. And so I just started leaning in that way.
Can I ask you a question about that? You said something I think that's really powerful. You talked about, you know, leaning in and working to learn versus working to earn. And that's something we've talked a lot about a little bit on this podcast and something I talk about always with my kids and teammates and friends. How did you make that decision? Because you talked about being under immense financial pressure. So it's your first year in real estate. You're struggling. It's a significant change in your financial situation. You talked about being worried about losing your home. So how in a moment like that, like what was going through your head that enabled you to make a decision that, hey, I'm going to go offer my services for free to somebody so that I can really figure out what they're doing and learn?
Yeah. You know, I think about oftentimes it's so natural to want something instantaneously and want it now. But I think for me, I was looking at the long term. I was looking at my son, who at that time was 6 and was in first grade. And I remember the feeling of not being able to go and pick him up or not being able to go to whatever his at-school activities were. And that wasn't something I wanted to sacrifice because I knew, like, I never got to see my parents growing up because they were always working. And that was the shift for me that I was like, no, I want to be able to control my time, my energy, my money, and what I do and how I spend it. And the only way I knew how to do that was if I learned what someone else has done, had already done it. And betting on myself 100%. Like, I think when you know what you want to do, where you're going, and you have a big why behind it, for me, it was my son, it's my family. I focused on the end result, on what I was wanting, not on what I had today. And I'm not going to lie, y'all, like, there were so many nights where I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. But through faith, through God, continuing to pray and honestly, having people like Cuckoo, even like people in your world that are there to support you, even through tough times, I think is what helps. So as someone of color, as someone who didn't have some of these mentors that did it, I think you have to think creatively of how do I get there? Because it might not be the same way as someone else did it. And being okay with it, because at the end of the day, no one can take away what you learn. Right. Like, that is something no one will ever take away from you. And I'm there for the knowledge. Once I learn it, let's go. And then I also believe in paying it forward and always.
Yeah. You know what? I really like that. And I know that Bo perked up when you said, did you say learn?
Work to learn versus work to earn.
Work to learn versus work to earn. That Bo perked up when you said that, because I know Bo's a huge proponent of that. And that's something for our listeners to really understand and just the people that engage to understand that every activity that you engage in business is not going to pay you monetarily, it may pay you in knowledge and experience that, as you said, you can't take that away. And a lot of times, you know, folks come into places and they're looking to see what they can get from the environment and not so much looking what they can give to the environment. So I thought that was huge that when you said that whole idea of you're working to learn, which means that you're bringing something to the environment instead of taking something from the environment. So, you know, kudos to you. And that's something for, you know, our group to just pay attention to, because there are dividends that you can't even measure. You can measure dollars, and that's going to be a limited amount of return. You can't measure the amount of knowledge that you can gain when you come from contribution. So
I love that, Imric. And this idea that there's two parts of that mindset, just to stay on this for 1 second. One part of the mindset is knowledge can take me places that short-term dollars can't, right? Mm. And that idea that if there's a long-term goal, I want to get knowledge, I want to learn. And then the second piece is I actually have something to offer. I'm not just coming and asking for something. I'm giving something. And when I give, I receive. So I've decided what I want to receive or decided the environment I want to be on where I can learn. And then I'm going to go find out how I can give to that environment. The reason why this is such a powerful thing for me is, like, in my life, I always see people coming in asking for mentorship, asking to learn something. But it's never followed up with a researching of who's the person you're asking for. Because even the most powerful people you look up to and you say, I wish I could be like them. Maybe you're on this podcast going, man, someday I can be like Rosie. But she's got problems. I can tell you, I got a lot of problems. I know I got a lot of problems. If you could come solve some of my problems, all of a sudden we're building a totally different type of relationship.
Yes.
That's going both ways versus a relationship that's just a one-way relationship. And those type of relationships are so much stronger and so much more valuable.
Exactly. It's a win-win every single time that you're trying to do. And when you give freely, like, it returns tenfold. And honestly, that's kind of how it led me to where I'm at today. Because of that, I learned how to invest in real estate. I learned, like, the Burr method. And that was how I was able to, like, first buy one home and then one turn to five. And then from there, I started asking more questions of, like, wait a minute, I hear the problems, not the problems, but the situations of our community almost every day. And that's where I'm looking at opportunities of, like, hey, what's missing? And funny enough, Cuckoo was one of my clients at the time, and he wanted to buy a home. And for him, it was, so we worked together in the past in corporate, and he wanted to be close to downtown. And we ended up in this neighborhood, which, guess what? That was where I first landed when I was 2 years old in Des Moines. It was the Riverbend neighborhood. And that's where he was, my first investment property, also purchased in that neighborhood. And so him and I just started, you know, brainstorming and thinking about, whoa, there's something here that I think we could actually do to help the community and also bring a win-win scenario. Cuckoo, how many years ago was this when we started talking about it? 4 years ago? 5 years ago?
Late 2020.
Oh, and Cuckoo, tell us just a little bit as you do that. Tell us a little bit about your background too, so that listeners can know a little bit about you.
So I'm an immigrant. I'm a Ghana boy, as people like to say. I moved to the States when I was 18. Family won the green card lottery. I moved to Iowa to go to university, got into investment management. Rosie and I worked at a bank together. I worked in investment management. And of course, 2020 happened, and it was a defining period of time where it was a recognition that all my skills and talents were going to making incredibly wealthy companies and wealthy people even more wealthy. And I fundamentally understood the role of that in markets. But to Rocio's point, it's the search for impact, right? The search to impact the communities that we're working in, that we're living in. And then through 2020, part of the recognition is where home is for me. Home had always been Ghana. But now it's like, oh, home could be Ghana and could be here also. So if that's the case, how am I contributing to home? So Rocio mentioned she helped me find a house in this neighborhood called Riverbend, and it's a neighborhood that has seen significant underinvestment. It'd been impacted by redlining, and there's this energy, right? I think there's a lot of neighborhoods that are super diverse, that have people from cultures from all over the world, all over the country. There's always this vibrance and this energy, and there wasn't a lot of, or there hasn't historically been an outlet for this energy. So this project that we developed was to create an outlet for this energy, to thinking about the needs of the community, right? Affordable housing is one of the national issues, and being able to participate in a solution for affordable housing in this community. Gathering spaces, it's a recognition that we've lost connection because we've lost places to gather. More and more, we're seeing that people are relying primarily on digital communications and not really going out there and meeting people. And that's something that we wanted to create, spaces that people can commune, can interact, can read body language, could hug each other, could shake each other, just something a little more tangible. And that led to the development of this project. It's a new building combined with a historic rehabilitation. The historic rehabilitation, it's a building called North Des Moines Town Hall. It's a building that's listed on the National Historic Registry. It was listed as one of the most endangered buildings in the state because it had been sitting empty for a long time. It was falling apart. And within this project, we're able to rehabilitate the building into 5 affordable housing units with a coffee shop on the first floor. That's combined with a larger project, which is a 24-unit apartment building with a food hall on the first floor. And we've been fortunate to have an incredible team. We have incredible people working. We have co-developers who have a ton of experience who are helping us navigate this process. It's a low-income housing tax credit project. And so there's some federal funding, there's some state funding, there's local city funding, which creates elements of complexity. So it's been navigating creativity and innovation within the confines of public programs.
And real quick, y'all, like, let's be real. We talked about it in the beginning. This is Iowa. So to even see anyone that looks kind of like us in this development space is very new. At least for me, it felt super new, and weren't sure how would this idea even come to fruition? So when we were doing this, we were trying to figure out how would it even work. And there was someone that reached out to Cuckoo who said, hey, guess what? The state of Iowa is doing this one-time set aside of $10 million. They said, you should pitch this project. And so we got together and we're like, okay, how do we do this? And submitted the application. We went to the pitching competition. We were one of the 4 finalists. And then all of a sudden, it's time. And they said, we won. And that's when I think it really hit. And it was real of like, hey, sometimes going back to like, you might not know exactly how to do it. You might not know if you even have the funding for it. But if what your idea is valuable enough, I think it all comes together. And so that's what really started this to really step forward. And now 2025, it's already starting in demo mode right now, and it's getting developed.
Home Team Inspection Service is changing the way agents and clients experience home inspections. Their team-based model, streamlined scheduling, and bundled packages, including home inspection warranties, make the process smoother from contract to closing. And with Pay at Close available in many locations, you can give your buyers more peace of mind with less upfront cost. Choose the team that works with yours. Visit hometeam.com to learn more.
So tell me a little bit about, now that you guys have had the opportunity to put this project together, where do you go from here? Like, what's next? Like, how does this fit into like the future? How are you guys thinking about this project in the scope of your long-term goals and aspirations as professionals?
That's such a good question, Bo. I think it might have different answers. So totally cool. But I think for me, long-term, something I'm really passionate about at one day dream is I want to develop one of the first women's soccer stadium in Mexico. I know in Kansas, they just built the first women's soccer stadium specifically for them. I'm passionate about soccer. I've played since I was 12, played in college, still play today. I coach. And so it's something special and important to me just because that kind of fills all the different aspects of what's important to me from a woman's perspective, from a cultural perspective, and then also to bring community together and people together. I think that's one thing that's important to me, especially after COVID. I felt very isolated, even sometimes in our communities, even within the brown community, even within the black community. Sometimes there's just so much separation. But if you can bring something and bring folks together, I think that's what sparks my creativity.
For me, it's this iteration has been developing the model, the buildings and unique projects that cater to community needs. So learning how to listen and understand the community. And of course, like some of the more technical aspects of fundraising, creating structures that allow for these deals to happen. Like with the project that we're working on, it's about 14 different sources of funds. So how do you layer all these different funds, right? Or I think sometimes when we think about projects, it's, oh, we need X amount of funding and equity, X amount of debt, but there's a little bit more diversity in funding that people think, and just being nimble. So we've been through the process the first time around. So of course, we're looking for the next one. We've started pre-development on the next project. We're looking for the next project. There's always projects and communities that we're focusing. We're focusing urban communities. We're focusing communities that are super, super diverse. We're focusing communities that could be classified as qualified census tracts, right? So just understanding some of these federal state programs, understanding these classifications, and understanding these programs that allow for projects like this to happen.
So maybe take a moment and like any lessons that you guys have learned in this process of trying to, you know, Cuckoo, you talked about, I love the way you said it, something about the latent energy in a community needing to be harnessed and moved in a direction, given an outlet. Like, talk to me a little bit about any interesting leadership lessons you guys have learned in one, coming together too, in the two different people with different skill sets, working with other partners, engaging the community. Like, what are your biggest, like, what have been some of the biggest learnings from this exercise?
I can share a couple different components, both from even running Team Aya and also just in other business partnerships. Like at the end of the day, I think you have to get really clear about your values and making sure those align at the end of the day. And you have to be aligned with the same vision. You know, recently, just being totally transparent with everybody, like even one of the co-founders of our team, you know, we're no longer in business together, not because we don't like each other, but because our visions are different now. And that's okay. And knowing that it's okay, but I think you have to have the trust and the open conversations with your business partners of what you want and what you expect. As a woman, I'll be honest, I was afraid to just, hey, I need X and Y. But I was met with a lot of emotions, and sometimes I had to learn as a leader to not people please. And if you really care about someone, you're going to ask and you're going to check in and have those tough conversations. I think that's been one of the biggest lessons for me. The second thing is that sometimes they don't have to be your business partner necessarily in that way. You have partners, you have connections. I think one of my biggest assets is just the connections. When I meet awesome people and I meet someone else, and if I can just build that bridge of how they might have some synergies together, like that's what I love to do. And that's what's helped me get further along. But I will say, like, you have to be true to yourself. You have to have those tough conversations and you have to have that trust in your partner and know that things aren't always going to go right. And it's okay when you're a constant problem solving. That's what we are. We're problem solvers at the end of the day.
For me, a big thing has been perseverance, right? And redefining what failure is, right? Where like you heard this stat, 90% of all small businesses fail. But something that I think about is, okay, what do those people go on to do after they've learned through the first time? And you don't really hear the back end stat, right? Like you go through these iterations where you try something that doesn't work. It could be observable as a failure, but then you're pivoting to something else and that's working. Mm-hmm. And so it's just the adaptability, the twisting, the turning, the learning, the picking no for an answer, just always like pushing and pushing. And it's something that I'm learning to do where like if there's an obstacle, taking a step back and really thinking, I'm like, okay, what is the fundamental problem? Like why isn't this working and how can it work? And to Emmerich's question, as far as the model is concerned, I truly believe there's opportunity and complexity, right? So a lot of times with some of these different programs that we navigate, a lot of people are scared of these programs because of how complex they are. And that fear makes it so that they can't learn. But these programs are open to almost anyone. You just have to be able to figure out how to pull together the right team. Pull together the right partners who have the requisite experience to be able to execute. So the specific model is partnering with large developers who may not have experience in the communities that we're working in. Right. So there's value in being on the ground, right? There's value in knowing the feel and vibe of a neighborhood, of a community. There's value in understanding what kind of projects could work there, what people are talking about around the dinner table. I'm like, oh, it'd be really nice if we had this. Like the project that we're working on, the coffee shop, the reason we're doing a coffee shop is it came out of a survey that they did in the neighborhood in like 2000 something, right? The number one thing the neighborhood wanted was a coffee shop. Fortunately, I've been a coffee shop purveyor, own a coffee shop right now. So it's like, oh, okay, there's something that people are asking for. With the food hall, we knew that there's a significant population within the community who's cooking out their kitchens, right? They've got great business. They're selling out every Friday, Saturday, but the barrier to owning their own restaurant is just so, so large that there needs to be a bridge. And that's what the food hall serves us. It serves as a bridge between the people who are cooking out open kitchens and who want to open their own restaurants, and is providing the structure and framework for them to manifest their skills. And right. That's what we're bringing to the table, a strong, deep understanding of these communities, these needs, and understanding of the market.
I want to go back to the model, but there's something you said just really hit me because it was on my mind. I had a conversation with one of my team members. We were in this very intense conversation where we've been working through a lot of stuff in the tough economy. And in the middle of the meeting, he sort of got overcome with emotion. And he looked us all in the eye and he said, I hate failing. I really hate failing. I effing hate failing. And I feel like I'm failing in everything I'm doing right now. And mm-hmm. I sat with it overnight. And I came back to talk to the team yesterday. And it really related to me because I hate failing. I don't fail. Like I would define myself as I win, I don't fail. My entire life has been a commitment to not failing at whatever it was I was going to do. But I started to think about it and I said, I too really hate failing. And much of my drive has been never to fail. But failing is actually necessary. Mm. Failing's necessary because failing's the key to greatness. Like, wow. It's what takes us beyond our limits. It's what takes us beyond our limiting beliefs. It's what teaches us. It's what develops us. So as much as I hate failure, it was this acknowledgement that failure is necessary to grow mm-hmm. and growth is necessary to be great. So therefore, failure is one of the most powerful transformative forces that we have in our lives if we harness it properly. And it's one of the things that can help us become a better version of ourselves.
You know, it's funny that this conversation come up. I just in this conversation yesterday and someone said, I've never failed at anything. I said, I don't see it as failure. I look at it as a way to take an alternative path to where I was attempting to go anyway. And I just had to learn those lessons in order to get to where I wanted to go. Mm. And I never looked at failure that way. And so, yeah, when that conversation came up about failures, it's not that you failed, it's just an alternative path to get to where you ultimately wanted to go, and your steps have been ordered to go in a different direction.
I also agree, like the failures, that's what's gotten us here, you know? And I think sometimes in the moments when you are failing, it's sometimes having that awareness. And my question would be to y'all, like, how do you switch it? How do you switch that when someone is in that funk or thinking that they're failing? Is there anything that you guys do to make it?
Oh, that's interesting.
Because if you're not aware, then you just keep going through life.
It's a state change.
Yeah.
Like what's been working for me really, really well lately, which I did not have before, is a real outlet, a personal outlet, because I absorbed so many things internally that I found myself in a day-to-day beating myself up. So the real question is, what personal outlet do I have to take me away from my normal day activities and allow me to be reflective and sit in my space to say, hey, it's better, you're better. You've got to sit and resolve this issue with yourself first, because the reality is that when people achieve at a high level, when you're working at your 70%, that's most people's 100%. Mm-hmm. Right? And you're beating yourself up for being at 70%. and your 70% is better than most people's 100%. And so I'm not saying that's acceptable. Let me make that clear. What I'm just saying is that we spend so much time beating ourselves up because we think we're failing. The reality is most of the time we're just not succeeding at the highest level that we expect ourselves to succeed at. And so for me, that personal space is I got a koi pond. I have a koi pond in my backyard, and I literally sit there every morning when I come from the gym for 2 hours and just be reflective of what I have to do and where am I going to take myself that day. So all I'm saying is find yourself a personal outlet so that you don't beat yourself up as much. And just remember that even when you're not succeeding at the highest level, notice I didn't say you're failing, you're not succeeding at the highest level, your 70 is better than most people's 100. And so your real question is, how do I optimize that other 30%? So don't look at it as failure.
Well, we're getting to the end of our time, but like, it's been wonderful having you guys. I would love to have you back because there's so much more we could go into. There's such richness here. As we sort of wrap up, though, it would be great to hear from you guys, just some closing thoughts. If a lot of the people that are out there listening, they're in communities or they're connected to communities, like the ones that aren't that different than the ones that you guys have been working in and come from and lived in, and they might be asking the question, I'm here and I'm wanting to do something in my community to make a difference. What would be your advice to them? Like, where should they start? What can they learn from your experiences that can turn some of their energy, talent, and love and connection to their community into something as productive as what you guys have done?
I think the first thing that comes to mind is just start. You're never going to have a perfect plan. And I think sometimes, at least what I've observed, is sometimes folks can get stuck in analysis paralysis.
Right.
And so you keep planning and planning. But until you actually do, like, I think that's one of the fastest and quickest ways that I've been able to continue to grow is because I just took relentless action. Like, I took it as feedback. If something didn't work, I went back. I'm like, okay, I'm just going to shift. I'm going to do it this way. So I think, as long as you believe, you're already halfway there. The other thing is just starting and then continuing every single day. And you don't take, Cuckoo said it, you don't take no for an answer. And Bo, I think you said it, you never fail. Like, you just don't, because you keep learning and you grow. And as long as you have that grit and that commitment, that discipline, I would say discipline more than anything, because there's going to be days where you don't feel like it. There's going to be days where people might not agree with you. You just keep going. And as long as you believe, you have to be delusional almost in your own dream, in your own path. I've gotten told so many times, like, why would you do that? You're going to fail. It's not going to work. Even my own family told me, don't get into real estate. Like, what are you doing? You have a great job. All of these things. But at the end of the day, is as long as you believe it and you go for it, you're unstoppable.
For me, I'd say understanding your personal mission, right? Understanding your why and building strategy or a model around your mission. And there's just so much fulfillment that comes from that. Like, with what we've been doing, like with this project, it's been a lot of hard work, but personally hasn't beaten me down because I truly believe that it's my mission, right? Mm. And that obsession has allowed perseverance, it's allowed for the push, it's understanding the mission and being aligned with that personal mission. And, you know, like there are things that it becomes so rote because you hear it over and over again. Like, why do companies have mission statements? Like, oh, like that there needs to be a North Star, right? There needs to be something that we're always going to. And then I take that personally also, right? Personally, there has to be a mission statement. There has to be a mission. There has to be a reason behind what you're doing and why you're doing it. Because when it gets difficult, when it gets tough, it's the mission that keeps you going.
Thank you guys so much for joining us. I think you've heard some amazing things here. I'm taking away that you got to get clear on your values. You got to know your mission. You got to just start. And then once you start, you got to persevere and you got to reframe failure into learning and keep going. And each of us has a huge opportunity, not just to succeed in that process personally and for our own families, but to make a great impact in our communities. And so excited to inspired by the work that you guys are doing and grateful for having you with us.
Perfect. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Appreciate y'all.
Follow the Color of Money podcast today and get notified when new episodes are released weekly.
Be part of this transformative listening experience.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. The views, thoughts, and opinions of the guest represent those of the guest and not Keller Williams Realty LLC and its affiliates, and should not be construed as financial, economic, legal, tax, or other advice. This podcast is provided without any warranty or guarantee of its accuracy, completeness, timeliness, or results from using the information.